Welcome to Torah Te'amecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meira, and today we'll be studying Parshat Vayishlach. This Parsha contains 5 prakim, from Lamed Bet till Lamed Vav, and it has 148 pesukim. So let's first discuss the 7 aliyahs just to get an overview of the Parsha, and then we're going to resume our discussion from last week, analyzing specifically Rachel Imenu. So in our first aliyah, Yaakov is on his way home after 20 years away. He knows he's about to encounter Esav, so he sends messages and he tells them to say to Esav, Im lavan garti. Garti means I lived, I sojourned. Rashi explains garti can be rearranged to be taryag. Taryag is the numerical value of 613. We have 613 mitzvot. Famous Rashi, Im lavan garti v'taryag mitzvas shamarti. Even though I was in this terrible environment in Aram, I kept all the mitzvot and I didn't learn from his evil ways. But the messengers return and say, Esav is coming to meet him with 400 men, meaning coming to attack. And Yaakov is very nervous. He divides his family in two, hoping that if the one half of the family is attacked, the other half will survive. And then he davens to Hashem, reminding him of his promise, that he promised Yaakov that he would become a huge nation, asking him to please save him. In the second aliyah, Yaakov sends lavish gifts to Esav. From Yaakov, we learn our plan, how to handle our enemies. Number 1, appeasement with gifts. Number 2, daven. And number 3, prepare for war. That's what Yaakov did. That night, Yaakov is crossing over the Yabok River with his family. And when everyone was on the other side, he went back to get the pachim katanim, the few things that he had left behind. And he encounters an angel, Esav's archangel, who wrestles with him until dawn. Even though the angel was unable to conquer Yaakov, he was able to injure him. He dislocated his hip bone. And then when the angel wanted to leave as the sun rose, Yaakov overcame him and he refused to let him go until he blessed him. So Esav's angel officially acknowledged that the birthright belongs to Yaakov, and he changed his name to be Yisrael, he who overpowered the angel. The angel blesses him. Third aliyah. Yaakov calls the site of his struggle Penuel, and as the sun rises, it heals his thigh. But the Torah mentions in parentheses that this is why we have the prohibition. We're not allowed to eat the sciatic nerve, because this was the area that Yaakov had injured. Yaakov sees Esav approaching, so he rearranges his family. First he sends Bila and Zilpah and their children, then Leah and her children, and finally Yosef in front of Rachel, because Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv, the most beloved at the end. But he personally went in front. He was prepared to protect his family, and he goes towards Esav, bowing 7 times, showing submission till he finally reaches Esav. And when Esav sees him, it says, they hugged and they kissed and they cried. And the word for kissed is Vayishakehu. It's written in a very interesting way. Every single letter is dotted. And the Mefarshim learn out of this 2 diametrical opposed opinions. One is Esav's heart softens towards Yaakov and he kissed him with true warmth, even though he had been angry with him previously. The other was no. He kissed him with the intent of trying to kill him. He wanted to bite him. But Hashem made a miracle and turned Yaakov's neck into marble. And instead, Esav hurt his teeth. So they were both crying because Esav hurt his teeth and Yaakov's neck was sore, but nobody died. In the fourth aliyah, Yaakov's family approaches and everybody bows to Esav, with the exception of Binyamin, because Binyamin was not yet born. That's why we have a tradition that the only tribe that can successfully destroy Amalek is the tribe of Binyamin. Yaakov urges Esav to accept his gift, and Esav doesn't want to take it from him. He says, Yesh li rav. This is how evil people speak. I have a lot, but I could always have more. But Yaakov, who's the tzaddik, insists. He says, please take it. Ki chaneni lakim v'chi yesh li kol. I have everything. Don't need anything. Please take it. Esav offers to accompany Yaakov all the way home, but Yaakov defers. He says, you know, I've got little children and animals. We walk slow. I will meet you in Har Seir. And he's referring to the future, which is discussed in the Haftarah from Avadia. So Esav goes back to his home in Har Seir, and Yaakov continues to the city of Sukkot. And eventually, Yaakov arrives to the outskirts of the city of Shechem, where he purchases a plot of land and he sets up an altar for Hashem. It's very interesting if you pay attention in Vayishlach at the route that Yaakov takes when he comes back from Haran to Eretz Canaan. He is stopping at the exact same places that Avraham stopped, and he's building Matzevot and Mizbachot in the exact same places that Avraham did. And it's a very interesting analysis to see why they stopped in each place, what was significant about each place. In the fifth aliyah, says Yaakov's daughter Dina is kidnapped by Shechem, who is the prince of that town. I don't know if he's named after the town or the town is named after him, but either way, he abducts Dina, he violates Dina, and he holds her hostage. He doesn't let her go home. Chamor, who's the father of Shechem, approaches Yaakov and wants to make a shidduch suggestion between them. Yaakov's sons answer in place of Yaakov, and they answer with wisdom. And they say, you know what, if all the men will circumcise themselves, then your sons can marry our daughters. But if they don't, then we're going to come take Dina back. Because they didn't actually expect all the men of Shechem to agree to circumcise themselves. But Shechem, who is infatuated with Dina, immediately circumcises himself. Chamor is more political about it. He tells his people, you know what, Yaakov's arrived, he's very wealthy, and he told us that if you all circumcise yourself, he will share all his wealth with you. So the people of Shechem undergo circumcision for financial incentives. Shechem does it for lustful incentives. But either way, they're all weak on the third day. Shimon and Levi, who are the biological brothers of Dina, come and they destroy the entire town. They kill everybody. And Yaakov is very upset when he finds out. He said, the promise of us to conquer Canaan's in the future. Until now, we've lived peaceably among them. But now you're going to make everybody angry with us. And they're forced to move from Shechem. But even as they move, the fear of Hashem is on all the surrounding cities. And none of them chase after Yaakov. Hashem instructs Yaakov to go back to Beit El. Because in the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, Yaakov had promised that if I come back in peace, I will offer you a tenth of all my possessions. And he'd forgotten his promise. And Hashem had sent him all these troubles as a reminder. So as Yaakov prepares to go back to Beit El, where he started his original journey, he commands his family to turn over all their idols and they bury them under the Elah. It is at this point that he discovers that Rachel had taken the trophim from Lavan. Remember, Yaakov's exact words to Lavan was, whoever is found to have the trophim, that person will die. No one had found them until now. So now the curse that Yaakov had given is about to become true. Also at this time, we are informed of the death of Devorah, who is the meneket of Rivka. It's unclear whether she was Rivka's nurse or she was a nurse on behalf of Rivka. Some say she had come to inform Yaakov of Rivka's death, and then she also died. So the last connection he has with his mother is gone. And Hashem appears to Yaakov at this point and officially changes Yaakov's name to Yisrael. In the sixth Aliyah, as Yaakov's families continue towards Hebron, Rachel goes into labor, and she's struggling with childbirth, and she bleeds to death. And as she's dying, she calls her son Ben Oni, son of my suffering. Yaakov is going to change his name to Binyamin, son of my strength, or as Rashiel translated, son of the south, because they were traveling south. Rachel is buried by the wayside. One of the opinions is because she bled to death, so she had to be buried there, but we're going to discuss another reason why in our discussion. After her death, Reuven rearranges his father's couch in such a way which forces his father to sleep somewhere else, not where he planned. He had no right to be involved with his father's personal marital life, and because of this, he loses the right to be the firstborn. Finally, the entire family is reunited with Yitzchak in Hebron, and it tells us here that Yitzchak died, even though he lived many years later, but it's just finishing the Yitzchak narrative. It says that Yitzchak died at a good old age, and both Esav and Yaakov buried him together in Maarat HaMachpelah. And then the Torah lists the wives and descendants of Esav who had left Canaan and settled in Har Seir. In the seventh Aliyah, the Torah lists all the princes who come from Edom. Esav is no longer called Esav, he's called Edom. And it tells us their genealogy of all their future leaders, and it's very interesting. Until now, the Torah always spoke about fathers and sons and family. Now it talks about chieftains. Rank has replaced relatives. The Torah and the Jews value family. The outside world favors power. And that is the end of the parasha. Last week, we took a closer look at our two Imahot, Leah and Rachel. And we discussed Leah's deep power of tefillah, how she was defined by her tefillah by the fact that it described her as her eyes were rakot. They were soft from so much crying. In contrast, Rachel is a woman of action. We don't see her davening. She's always trying to solve her problems in a very practical way. So in the beginning, when she sees her sister's about to be embarrassed, she gives her sister the simanim. When she sees she's not having children, she asks Yaakov to marry her maidservant Bila so she could be a surrogate mother. Then she asks Leah for the dudaim. Whenever she sees a problem, she tries to solve it. Even when she has a child, it says, Vayiskor Elokim et Rachel, Hashem remembered Rachel, Vayishma Ala, and he listened to her, Vayiftach et Rachman, he opened her womb. So it says he heard her, which means she must have prayed, but we don't see any tefillah on Rachel's side. Why is this? Because there are two types of tefillah. The basic tefillah that most of us associate with is a tefillah of petition. I have an issue and I ask Hashem, please help me with X. Rachel can do that. But there's a higher level of tefillah, and that's the tefillah of Leah. This is the tefillah of complete vulnerability, where you cry out in pain and you just unbear your soul to Hashem. We see an example of this with the Jewish people in Egypt. When Vitzaku El Hashem, they cried out to Hashem. The Or HaChaim says that this was the tefillah that got them rescued. It didn't have any words. It was just a deep cry of pain from their soul. In fact, the Rabbeinu Bachaya says that the time of the redemption had come, but they weren't redeemed until they started to pray this deep cry from their soul. This is what Rachel has to learn how to do. Everything she does, she'll ask Hashem, she'll be practical, but she's not crying from the depths of her soul. And you can see this, the way that the window we have into the Imahot's emotions are how they name their children. So compare the names of Leah's children to the names of Rachel's children. Leah's children are Reuven, Hashem has seen my pain, Shimon, God has heard my complaints. Rachel's names are more matter of fact, like Dan, Hashem has judged my case. Naphtali, I've wrestled with my sister and I have prevailed. Even when she finally has Yosef, she says, Hashem should give me an additional son. She is initiating the tefillah of petition, but she can't yet access the tefillah of complete vulnerability, of opening your neshama to Hashem. She can't do that. But in this parasha, as she's dying in childbirth, she calls her son Ben Oni. She reveals the deep pain of a woman who waited her whole life to have a child. And finally, as she gives birth, she realizes she will never be able to raise that child. And she dies crying. Finally, she opens herself up to tefillah. And once she starts, she never stops. We see in Parashat Vayechi, when Yaakov is explaining to Yosef why he buried her on the side of the road, he says Hashem told him to. And Rashi expounds on this, bringing a nevuah from Yirmiyahu, which dramatically describes the scene. Kol barama nishma, a voice on high is heard. Rachel mevaka al bana. Rachel is still crying. She died crying and she is still crying. She is lying by the side of the road crying for her children in exile. She is the symbol, Mother Rachel, crying for every person who's suffering in exile. She's the only one who Hashem will listen to. So it's interesting that through the power of deep cry of pain, Leah gets what she always wanted, which was to be the main wife. Rachel got what she wanted, to be the true mother of the Jewish people. But our question is, why did Rachel wait until she died? Why was she unable to cry before then? There's a prophecy in Yechezkel where he explains that Hashem says, V'natati lachem lev chadash v'ruach chadasha, etem b'kir b'chem, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit, and specifically for the purpose of our discussion, v'hasirosi et lev ha'even mipsarchem, I will remove the stone heart from your flesh, v'natati lachem lev basar, I will give you a heart of flesh. What is this heart of stone and heart of flesh? So I heard from Rabbi Tatz. A heart of stone means that when we go through pain and suffering, Hashem gives us the bracha of a stone heart. Because if we would actually truly contemplate the pain that we are going through, it would destroy us. We need to adopt a measure of stoicism to be able to put our head high and put on that smile and square our shoulders and keep going even though our heart is totally broken inside. That's very difficult. But in the time of Mashiach, when all our pain is over, we're able to once again feel and reflect and actually appreciate all the tremendous struggles we went through, because now there's no more suffering. So the same with Rachel. Rachel had a very difficult life. She didn't have a mother. Lavan forced her to do work that wasn't really suited for a girl, being a shepherd. Then she had her husband taken away from her, and she was a rival to her sister, and she didn't have children, and she had so many struggles on her plate, and she had to be very stoic. She couldn't afford to feel. She had to keep going. But at the end of her life, when there was nothing left to struggle for, she could finally let go. And when she finally let go, she was able to access that high level of tefillah that enables her to be the advocate of the Jewish people to this day. And I think we can take a practical lesson from this, because a lot of times we can't afford to have our lev basar. We need to have a lev even just to keep going. But then how do we daven? We can't access the deeper, higher level of tefillah if we have a heart of stone. So we go back to the beginning of the parsha where Yaakov divided his family in two. And we reflect that for every person who's struggling with something, there's somebody else who can daven for them, who maybe isn't undergoing that particular struggle. I remember when we just recently had the Siyam with the OU Women's Initiative for Tehillim, Mrs. Rivka Siegel was discussing, she did the first book of Tehillim, she was saying how when you run down to the bomb shelter, you don't have time to say Tehillim, you're sorting out your kids, you're making sure everyone's safe, you're calming down whoever's crying. And she turned to the audience and she said, you need to daven for us. And that is what Yaakov meant when he split the camp in two. Some of us have to just survive. The other half has to daven for them. And if we can each take turns feeling the other's pain, you have to have your heart of stone so that you can survive. I'll have my heart of flesh. I'll feel for you. I'll daven for you. In this way, we'll all endure. We'll all be answered. And Bezrat Hashem, we should all be worthy of seeing Mashiach and the final Geula speedily, speedily soon. Have a wonderful week.